Hi, and welcome to Reader's Digest. I'm your volunteer reader, Tigger, and today I'll be reading from the November issue. The first article we're going to cover is on dementia breakthroughs. After decades of disappointments, new treatments and tests are finally here. This article is by Vanessa Milne. 8 years ago, neurologist Dan Gibbs was sitting in a room with 24 doctors and researchers. He was getting ready to look at brain scans, not a patient's, but his own. They would definitely answer a question he'd had for years. What was wrong with him? It started when he was 55 and working in Portland, Oregon. He noticed he couldn't smell certain things like flowers. Then he began to smell things that weren't there, like perfume, citrus, or baking bread. He randomly got a clue as to what might be the cause after doing an at-home DNA test to find out more about his family tree. The result showed he had two copies of a gene, APOE4, that increases the risk of developing Alzheimer's. He was shocked. Before his genetic test, it had never occurred to him that he might get the disease. At the time, he had no memory symptoms. But over the next few years, he noticed some mild memory problems, like forgetting his colleagues' names and having difficulty memorizing his new office phone number. That, combined with his background as a researcher, led him to participate in a study at the University of California, San Francisco, that was focused on diagnosing Alzheimer's, and now the results were in. The researchers pulled up the pictures and showed him beta-amyloid plaques in different parts of his brain, including his prefrontal cortex and the olfactory area, which controls smell. It was a sign of early-stage Alzheimer's. Surprisingly, Dr. Gibbs was happy. When they showed me the scans, it was a relief to have a firm diagnosis, he says. What is dementia? Dementia is an umbrella term for a group of symptoms contributing to a decline in memory, thinking, reasoning, and social abilities. It's progressive, and some people with dementia will need around-the-clock help at the end of their lives. 55 million people around the world have dementia, including 5.8 million in the United States. While only 1% of those ages 65 to 69 have it, the risk of being diagnosed doubles every 5 years between the ages of 65 and 84. 1 in 4 people over 85 have dementia. But breakthroughs in treatment and testing this year have given new hope to researchers like Don Weaver, a clinical neurologist and the director and senior scientist at the Krembill Research Institute at the University Health Network in Toronto. There's genuine room for optimism, he says. The research is moving at a faster pace than ever before. That has come to fruition with new treatments, plus groundbreaking tests in the pipeline, and more to come. There are about a dozen different causes of dementia. The most common is Alzheimer's disease, which accounts for 60 to 70% of dementia cases. While the cause of Alzheimer's is not yet fully understood, researchers have been focusing on the malfunctioning of two specific brain proteins. The first, beta-amyloid proteins, are a normal part of the central nervous system and are usually cleared out of the brain. In a brain with Alzheimer's, however, these proteins are not properly cleared away. The protein clumps together between neurons, creating deposits called amyloid plaques, which disrupt cell function. The second type, tau proteins, are primarily found inside neurons. In people with Alzheimer's, this protein, which normally assists the transportation of nutrients throughout the brain, accumulates and becomes tangled inside the neuron. The buildup of these two proteins affects the ability of brain cells to communicate. Eventually, they kill the cells, affecting a person's ability to think and remember. Other types of dementia include Lewy body dementia, where protein deposits, called Lewy bodies, build up in the brain, affecting thinking, memory, and movement. Vascular dementia, which can happen after a stroke or blood vessel damage, reduces the flow of blood and oxygen to the brain. And frontal temporal dementia, when the frontal and temporal lobes of the brain shrink. This last kind can happen to people as young as 40. Actor Bruce Willis was recently diagnosed with it at age 67. New drugs for Alzheimer's. For decades, the treatment of dementia has seemed frustratingly dormant. Two classes of drugs that were introduced 3 decades ago can improve symptoms. Cholinesterase inhibitors boost acetylcholine, a chemical the brain needs for alertness, memory, and judgment. Emetatine regulates glutamate, a chemical messenger needed for learning and memory. But neither offers a way to limit the disease's progress. Aducanumab, launched 2 years ago, can reduce buildup of amyloid plaques in the brain in Alzheimer's patients, but it has not proved to slow cognitive decline. Now, thanks to years of research progress, we're on the brink of major advances in treatment and prevention. The new drugs are big, exciting breakthroughs, says Jill Livingston, a professor of psychiatry of older people at University College London. However, she adds, it's still early. In January of this year, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved the first drug that slows the progress of Alzheimer's, rather than just treating the symptoms. In clinical trials, people with Alzheimer's who took the drug lecanemab, the brand name is Leqembi, for 18 months, showed their rate of memory and cognitive decline was 27% less than in those who took a placebo. But it's not clear what that decline translates to in the real world. And there are downsides to the new drug, which is given by IV. It's expensive, and it can have serious side effects, including bleeding in the brain. A second drug, donanemab, not yet approved by the FDA, has also showed promise in clinical trials. It slows the rate of cognitive decline from Alzheimer's by about 1/3, but like the other drug, it can have similar serious side effects. So we're not quite there, says Dr. Livingston, but it's fantastic that we're beginning to be there. Big leaps forward in prevention. In the past few years, our knowledge about preventing dementia has increased dramatically, and we've learned that many issues that cause dementia are treatable. We finally sorted out what the risk factors are, and we're paying attention to them, says Dr. Weaver. According to a 2020 Lancet report led by Dr. Livingston, 40% of dementia cases could be avoided. The number one factor was hearing loss, which can affect your ability to talk to other people and can lead to isolation. That really surprised us, Dr. Livingston said, and it's a reversible risk because you can change it by using hearing aids. Spending time socializing was another important lifestyle factor. Talking to other people stimulates your brain and gets it working because you have to engage. You have to think, Dr. Livingston explains. Getting 150 minutes of exercise a week can keep your heart in good shape, which translates into a healthier brain. Having a stimulating job also helps, as does having more education earlier in life. It boosts what's known as your cognitive reserve, so even if you do suffer from a loss of cognitive power, you have some to spare. Treating depression is also important. And then there are things to avoid. Smoking and air pollution raise the risk of developing dementia, and it's now known that traumatic brain injury increases the risk, as does heavy drinking, having high blood pressure or diabetes, and being obese. We now know that for many people, dementia is not inevitable, says Dr. Livingston. Blood tests for more accurate diagnosis. Just as important as new medications are breakthroughs in diagnosis. Multiple blood tests for Alzheimer's, which have been used widely in clinical trials, are expected to be available to the public before the end of 2023, according to Jill Rabonovicki, a neurologist and the director of the University of California, San Francisco's Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Currently, Alzheimer's is diagnosed by doctors through a combination of means, including physical exams, brain imaging, and reviewing symptoms and family medical history. Doctors will also administer cognitive tests, such as asking people to remember a list of words, draw a clock, or name as many animals as they can. What's missing from this evaluation is direct and conclusive biological evidence of Alzheimer's, meaning that the diagnosis relies heavily on the doctor's expertise. Dr. Weaver agrees, it's not like rheumatoid arthritis, for which we can do a blood test, or pneumonia, where you can do an x-ray and go, yep, you've got it. That's important because according to a 2012 study, about 30% of people clinically diagnosed with Alzheimer's were discovered through autopsy to not actually have had it. That study looked at people with mild to moderate dementia. But for those with only mild cognitive impairment, which is harder to diagnose, the accuracy would be even lower. In some cases, that would mean that instead of having Alzheimer's disease, people might have vascular or Lewy body dementia. However, for others, their symptoms are caused by something reversible, such as sleep disorders like sleep apnea, mood disorders like depression, or hormonal changes. Medications such as those used to treat insomnia, incontinence, and even allergies can negatively affect cognitive function, especially in older adults. With new Alzheimer's drugs now available, it's even more important that doctors have the right diagnosis before they prescribe anything, as accurate diagnosis allows people to make crucial decisions, such as whether to quit their jobs or move into assisted living, and allows their families to plan for caregiving support. Michelle Mielke, chair of the Department of Epidemiology and Prevention at Wake Forest University School of Medicine in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, says an earlier and more accurate diagnosis, which a blood test may provide, could transform health care in the future. Plaques start developing in the brain about 20 years before symptoms begin, she explains, and not everyone with plaques will develop cognitive impairment. She says that years from now, just like we screen people for their cholesterol because we know it is a risk factor for heart attack and stroke, we might be able to screen people by a certain age for amyloid and tau brain proteins. And if they are elevated, we could try a treatment plan of medications that will delay or prevent the person from ever developing symptoms. Finally, a focus on caregivers. Caring for a family member with dementia can be incredibly stressful, but for a long time, caregivers' needs have been overlooked. Now their struggles are better known thanks to research findings. A review published in Dialogues in Clinical Neuroscience in 2022 found in developed countries, up to 85% of caregivers develop depression and up to 45% developed anxiety. At the same time, however, community support is growing. Initiatives include memory cafes, where caregivers can go with their loved ones who have dementia to have a coffee, share in activities, find community, and just feel normal for a while. There are more than 700 memory cafes in the U.S. Your local Alzheimer's organization can help you find one near you. Visit alz.org and click the Local Resources tab. Other public places, such as museums, are also getting on board, running dementia-friendly days where people with cognitive issues and their caregivers are welcome. Phoenix, Arizona is one of the largest of dozens of cities that have become dementia-friendly. Under the Dementia Friendly America initiative from USA Aging, the city has expanded its number of memory cafes and runs Dementia Friends presentations that educate people about the condition and how to help those who have it. You are listening to Reader's Digest on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. Remember, if you miss any part of this program, you can always listen to it on demand and on our website. Go to Broadcast Info and Audio and click on Demand. Back to our article on dementia. In addition, the Phoenix Airport offers compassion cacti lanyards printed with green cactuses to people who have dementia or other invisible disabilities, which indicate passengers who may need more help. Abroad, Wembley and London would become the first UK's dementia-friendly national stadium. The goal is to improve the match day experience for people living with dementia, who can find sporting venues disorienting and overwhelming. Paula Spencer Scott, the Fort Collins, Colorado, author of Surviving Alzheimer's, Practical Tips and Soul-Saving Wisdom for Caregivers, knows firsthand how hard caregiving is. She cared for her father-in-law who had dementia. "Truly, the most intense emotions I've ever experienced have been from being a live-in caregiver," she says. As a coping mechanism, she and her husband used to say to each other, "It's not him, it's the dementia." "Intellectually, you know that," she says, "but emotionally, you can just be so frustrated and almost angry with the person, and then you feel guilty." Though it's not a full solution, there's now a push for caregivers' work to be financially supported. Many states now allow children, grandchildren, and even friends to be paid for caregiving through Medicaid, and more are allowing spouses to be paid as well. It's been a breakthrough for caregivers that there's an increasing emphasis on their emotional and mental health, says Scott. Over the last 10-15 years, there's been a huge groundswell of support. This also helps to reduce the stigma around people with dementia, says Dr. Gibbs. "I'm very upfront with telling people about my Alzheimer's. A couple of weeks ago, my wife and I went to our 50th college reunion, and I talked to my classmates about it. Sometimes I think we're too hesitant to engage people with dementia." More clarity on the causes. Over the past two decades, there has been a myopic focus on amyloid plaque, says Dr. Weaver. His lab is researching another factor, inflammation. "I think of Alzheimer's as an autoimmune disease of the brain, where the immune system is turned on by multiple factors, like air pollution, depression, or infection," he says. "Now you have a hopped-up immune system on a search-and-destroy mission in the brain. It's wandering around inside your skull, and oops, it searches for and destroys a few neurons, which causes inflammation." Other researchers, too, are looking in different directions, he says. Malfunctioning of the brain's mitochondria, which produces energy for cells, lipids in the brain becoming distorted or diseased membranes, damage to which could kill the cell. Treatments being tested for other possible dementia causes include stem cell therapy and transcranial magnetic stimulation. Dr. Weaver says he will always remember one of his first encounters with a dementia patient, a military veteran. "The poor man was so confused that he was hiding under his hospital bed," Dr. Weaver recalls. "He was reliving his war experiences. I got down on my hands and knees and looked into this man's eyes. It was heartbreaking. I thought, we've got to do something for these people." After the frustrating decade since then of delivering the news to thousands of patients they have dementia, he's become more determined than ever to finally be able to tell them, "I have something that can help you." While the holidays, I suppose, are officially over, this article, Holiday Eating to Boost Immunity, by Beth Winehouse, still has some very good pointers for everyday eating. People don't generally use the words healthy and holiday eating in the same sentence, and when they do, it's usually to express a worry about impending weight gain. Holidays are often a time of indulgence, even for people who are usually careful about their diets the rest of the year. But there's more to holiday eating than avoiding excess calories. What we eat affects the health of the entire body, including the immune system. Since most of the body's immune system is concentrated in the gut, and the trillions of healthy bacteria living there, called the microbiome, what we eat has a direct impact on how the immune system functions. A lot of people don't think about the effects of what they eat on immunity, but the science says it's crucial, says Heather Moday, MD, founder of the Moday Center for Functional and Integrative Medicine in Norfolk, Virginia, and Philadelphia. And it's especially important at this time of year, since the winter holidays occur around the time when illnesses like cold, flu, COVID-19, and other respiratory illnesses peak. While an occasional indulgence probably won't cause lasting damage, throwing caution to the wind from Thanksgiving to New Year's Day or Halloween to Super Bowl Sunday is certainly unhealthy and might make you more susceptible to getting sick. Even just a month of really just blowing it and not caring about nutrition can impact the microbiome, says Kristen Kirkpatrick, a registered dietitian at Cleveland Clinic's Department of Wellness and Preventive Medicine. To keep your immune system functioning optimally, you don't have to stop celebrating. Just celebrate a little smarter. During the holidays, we're more likely to be confronted with and indulge in foods that are sweet or salty, and of course, alcoholic beverages. All these things can cause inflammation in the body, potentially weakening the functioning of the immune system. If your immune system is overburdened with unnecessary things to do, then it can't do a very good job of taking care of things. Dr. Moday replies, you don't have to be completely abstemious over the holidays, but celebrate in a limited way with the following. Sugar. Sweet eggnog, hot chocolate, holiday cookies, and candy canes are traditional winter celebration foods, and refined grains like the white flour and many baked goods are turned to sugar in the body. These foods taste great, but unfortunately sugar is one of the worst things for your immune system. Eating a lot of sugar day in and day out is very inflammatory to the blood vessels and brain. It's not good for the immune system either. White blood cells don't like all that sugar. Packaged and processed foods, fast foods, and many restaurant meals contain more salt than most of us use from a shaker at home. About 84% of the salt Americans consume comes from processed and ultra-processed foods. The extra salt may raise blood pressure and heart disease risk. It may also have a negative impact on the immune system. A German study published in 2020 found that human volunteers who consumed an additional 6 grams of salt per day, about the amount in 2 fast food meals, showed pronounced immune deficiencies after just 1 week. An occasional glass of wine with dinner is unlikely to have much effect on your immunity, but during the holidays we may sip wine more often and add treats like champagne, spiked eggnog, and hard cider. Early in the COVID-19 pandemic, the World Health Organization, concerned by higher levels of pandemic drinking, issued a statement warning that far from being protective, excessive alcohol can weaken the immune system. Studies have shown that alcohol can decrease the activity of T cells, says Dr. Moday, referring to a type of white blood cell. It can also lower the production of antibodies. Just as important as what you don't eat is what you do. Even if you're enjoying more sweet goodies and alcoholic drinks than usual, don't neglect giving your immune system the nutrients it needs for optimal health. It's not realistic to say I'm only going to eat healthy foods at a party, admits Kirkpatrick, but look around to see where nutrient density can be added. Why no single food can guarantee you won't get sick, eating well can put the odds in your favor. Make sure that even your party diet contains plenty of the following. Fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, beets, and whole grains are all great sources of fiber. But according to the USDA, most Americans don't get enough in their diets. And that's especially true at holiday time. If you look at a table of foods set out for the holidays, there's often minimal fiber. But you need fiber for your gut. It's what feeds your microbes. These foods also contain other nutrients important for immunity, such as vitamins A, C, D, and E, as well as zinc. Kirkpatrick adds that study results show that adding one or two extra servings of fruits and vegetables to the diet every day can reduce inflammation in as little as 3 weeks. You can also help populate your microbiome directly by consuming foods that contain healthy live bacteria. Many fermented foods are probiotic, including some types of yogurt, sauerkraut, miso, pickles, and even cheese, such as cottage cheese, cheddar, mozzarella, and gouda, and sometimes are labeled as containing live or active cultures. Dr. Modé cautions that people should talk to their doctors before taking a probiotic supplement, as some studies have indicated that the supplements may be detrimental for healthy people without gut symptoms. Don't forget to round out your diet with healthy fats and proteins, both of which are important to keep the body functioning well. Finally, keep in mind that even the busiest social calendar doesn't include parties every night of the week. What are you eating from Sunday to Thursday, says Kirkpatrick? Those are the days you can really focus on your gut health and your immunity. That's a lot less harm done if 4 days out of the week you're eating pretty well. Well, that's all the time we have today for Reader's Digest. Thank you for listening. My name is Tigger. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.